The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly, and Richmond Graduate University can equip you with everything you need as a licensed professional counselor while integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmont.edu. That's richmont.edu.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells,
about residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there,
and the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle, stories about life on the inside told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Gold Dome Scramble, our weekly checkup of the Georgia General Assembly. I'm Lisa Raham. With me today are again our politics reporters, Emma Hurt and Emil Moffitt. Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hey, Lisa.
Hey, and this is a special week because we have had a week of budget hearings. So we've also invited Martha Dalton, WABE education reporter, and Sam Whitehead, our health reporter. Good morning to the both of you.
Morning, Lisa.
Hello.
Well, listen, you know, it's been a busy week of budget hearings. And first off, I want to each of you to tell us in a few words your biggest takeaway from the week in regards to budget hearings. Martha, let's begin with you, education and schools.
Yeah, basically, schools need money. Let's not beat around the bush. The pandemic's been really hard on schools, and, you know, they need a lot of money to recover.
Yeah, on the health side, speaking of the pandemic, we were all waiting to see, you know, how all the state's efforts to fight COVID have been funded. Turns out, it's mostly by federal dollars.
Yeah, and I think that's critical, what Sam just mentioned, the federal dollars, the state relying very heavily on that to kind of weather the storm of the pandemic while keeping the state budget intact. And so we'll see what repercussions that has going down the road.
And then for me, I mean, we're coming off of tough budget cuts last year. And this year, the governor has highlighted that there are no new budget cuts. There's no furloughs. But we got to remember, there's still cuts that are carrying over from before the pandemic. So it's not all roses and rainbows.
So with that said, were there any real surprises when it comes to that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think I was surprised that here we are still fighting a pandemic, still, you know, things are not going well for schools, as Martha mentioned, and our healthcare funding, and yet, you know, we are adding back into our rainy day reserve fund. The governor was able to add $150 million back in, and we still have about $2.5 billion left. So the question is this not a rainy day? Should we be using these funds, you know, while it's raining? And that's what a lot of advocates, I think, are wondering. But, you know, the governor's decided that this is his priority to add funds back in because, you know, the rainy day reserve fund is important for our bond rating. And it's, you know, important, he would argue, for maintaining a conservative budget. But he's decided not to use any of that money and still let the cuts carry over where they have. That being said, some have been added back. But ultimately, the reserve fund is the governor's, that's his power. He gets to decide whether to use it, and he's decided not to.
And the budget is based on an estimate of how much the state is expected to take in over the coming year. Emil, state economist Jeffrey Dorfman gave lawmakers his outlook going forward. Any real takeaways there?
He was optimistic, saying that Georgia is in a good position to recover coming out of the pandemic and the shutdown whenever that happens. He credits the early reopening of the economy, which of course came with great risk to a great many Georgians, and the innovation of businesses making adjustments to deal with COVID safety precautions. He also said Georgians are being a little more responsible with their money.
The fact that credit card debt is down, our credit scores are up, and our savings in the bank is up, all mean that when we've all been vaccinated and we have the pandemic under control and can get back to whatever the will become normal after this, that our economic recovery should be quite strong and swift because people have the money to spend and are just waiting for the chance when it is safe to do so.
And so the bottom line, the big budget cuts to state agencies that we saw last year are not in this year's budget, but as Emma mentioned earlier, critics of the governor's budget say state agencies are still feeling the sting of those past budget cuts and are not being funded as they should be.
Martha, let's bring you in here. You know, education always becomes a large part of the conversation most legislative sessions. What were the highlights this year for you?
Well, there were a couple of things the governor did that educators are very happy about. One is that he restored about 60% of the austerity cuts from last year. Now, lawmakers, just to remind people, were so concerned about the pandemic last year, they cut almost $1 billion from the K-12 budget. So the governor's recommended restoring, you know, a lot of that. They're pleased with that. Districts are pleased with that. But of course, they would love eventually to see all of the cuts restored. Another thing he did, this will be a hold harmless year for enrollment numbers. And this is really important because enrollment dropped significantly during the pandemic, especially in the younger grades, pre-K and kindergarten. And that can really hurt districts' budgets because they use those enrollment numbers to determine things like how many buses they're going to need. So this is going to help them a lot to hold them harmless for this year when the enrollment numbers have dropped a lot. Another thing he's done, he allocated $10 million for families of students with special needs. This is coming from the federal money, though. This is coming from as part of the CARES 2 Act money. And it's something that parents with those students who have special needs have been asking for. You know, schools have been trying to serve them during the pandemic, but it's really, really hard sometimes because not a lot of those services can be delivered virtually. So a lot of parents have had to spend out of pocket for things like tutors, and now they can be reimbursed for some of that. The governor's also allocated $5 million for college juniors and seniors to finish their degrees. This is also coming from the federal money. And this could be really important for Georgia, though. I have to say, you know, there are thousands of college students who don't finish their degrees because of a few hundred or a few thousand dollars every year. So this could really help a lot of students get across the finish line.
Martha, you've referenced a lot there. What about pay raises for the teachers? There was so much talk about that last session. Is that getting lost in all of this?
The short answer is it's complicated. Last year, some districts were able to give raises, but not every district. And this year, you know, obviously with the pandemic, it's just tougher. So what the governor has done is he's combined some funds, some of his discretionary funds, with funds from the State Department of Education. They're going to give $1,000 to all school employees, or at least that's the intent. The money will go to school districts, and you know, again, the intent is to have every school employee get a $1,000 bonus. But if schools have other, you know, sort of pressing budget holes they need to fill, they may use the money for that.
I see a lot of teachers shaking their heads. Do you think that's going to go over well if that happens?
You know, every time this issue comes up, I think the intention is always to give educators raises if the money is there. It's just sometimes, you know, districts are so strapped for cash that they have other things they have to spend the money on.
All right. Thank you so much, Martha. Let's talk about health. What a year it's been for Georgia and the rest of the world in regards to the pandemic. Sam, as you know, the budget, a huge part of the budget, is mostly made up of Medicaid funding. But the state also pays for our public health system that is quite stressed these days. What is that budget looking like?
I think that's a question on everyone's minds. How is the state going to put money towards this public health response? And as I alluded to at the start of our conversation, the state really isn't doing that. At budget hearings last week, Dr. Kathleen Toomey, who leads the Georgia Department of Public Health, spent a substantial portion of the hours she had to present to talk about everything that DPH has done this year. This is testing. This is supporting hospitals. This is rolling out vaccines. And then kind of at the end, just threw in, all of this, for the most part, is being paid for by federal dollars. The state has received about $1 billion from the feds to support the public health response. I reached out to DPH to ask, is there really no state money going to support this? And there really isn't. They say that they have really relied on this federal money so far, and that they expect these dollars to keep coming to support the state's response down the road.
Sam, I just keep thinking about this and wondering if all of our, most of the money or all of it is coming from the feds, what happens long term to our Department of Public Health? Is there enough money for it to sustain itself after a pandemic?
That's something I've been wondering too, honestly. It gets down to this question of, do you invest in your public health infrastructure when you see a crisis coming, or do you invest when the coast is clear? I think that there is certainly value to making investments when you're not in the middle of a crisis. We have seen, just take for example, the vaccine rollout here in Georgia, which is not going as well, I think, as anyone has hoped, even state leaders like Governor Brian Kemp. And I have to wonder if there's not money put into our public health infrastructure right now and after this pandemic, what happens when the next one comes? Because you can only do so much in the moment. Rolling out the vaccines is hard to do when you're also trying to keep hospitals afloat and get people tested, right? So I think there's an over-reliance on federal cash coming in the door in an emergency doesn't give us the tools and the resources we need to really effectively act and respond when the emergency inevitably arrives.
And how much of this is on the minds of lawmakers right now? And will this factor into their discussion soon?
I'm curious to see that too, Lisa. During the hearings last week, most of the questions for lawmakers were about the vaccine. Everyone just wants to know when they can get one and why it's not easier for some folks to do that. These initial budget proposals tend to get tinkered with a little bit, so we'll have to see if there's that investment down the road. But I can imagine it's going to be a hard sell in a still Republican-controlled state house to say, let's put state money into this when we are getting so much from the feds. Again, this is billion with a B, $1 billion so far. And at that level of investment, there's still going to be a lot of money coming in the door. So I honestly think it would probably be a hard sell to get Republican lawmakers or anyone to invest state dollars with that kind of federal money coming in the door.
All right. Meanwhile, the pandemic rages on. Sam Whitehead, thanks. We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, more budget talks. You're listening to Gold Dome Scramble.
Support comes from Grady Health Foundation, presenting Move for Grady Saturday, April 27th, featuring a family-friendly bike ride through Atlanta's in-town neighborhoods. There's a ride, run, or walk distance for everyone, benefiting Grady Health System. More at moveforgrady.com.
You love free, and at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Welcome back. We're here with WABE politics reporters Emma Hurd and Emil Moffitt, as well as Sam Whitehead and Martha Dalton, talking about the budget talks, the budget proposals. What happens next? What's next on the table, Emma?
So now lawmakers get their turn to try to tinker with the budget, move things around, add some back in and subtract. But remember, they can't add any money on their own. So if they want to increase something, they have to decrease it somewhere else. And, you know, as that's happening, all of the lobbyists are out in full force trying to advocate for their portions of the budget to get increased wherever possible.
Sam, Speaker Ralston specifically has said that Georgia's mental health system needs reforming. Are you seeing anything in the budget that speaks to that?
Not really. So the agency that helps people with mental health issues here in Georgia, the Department of Behavioral Health and Developmental Disabilities, at their budget hearing last week, there's really not a lot that they are asking for. There is a request that they have put out to support a few dozen spaces in West Georgia for people in psychiatric crisis. These are bed spaces to help those people get treatment, but not much else dedicated to mental health. Speaker Ralston has signaled that mental health is one of his priorities this year. I think part of the budget process, too, is agencies sometimes take their cues from lawmakers. They wait for a program or an initiative to make it into law, and then they appropriate the money the next year round. So if this is indeed a priority of the speaker, we'll have to see if legislation moves and that kind of signals agencies to say, hey, we need money in this space.
All right. Lawmakers are there, of course, to by law to get this budget done. But, Emil, I want to know if anything else is happening. What will you be watching this week other than the budget?
Well, election reform is still a hot topic, especially now that it's official. There's a Democrat in the White House and two Georgia Democratic senators have been sworn in. Democrats have introduced a bill that would expand voting rights for nonviolent felons. Meanwhile, Republicans are pushing for a photo ID requirement for absentee voting. They also want to ban private grant money being used to run elections. You'll remember we saw millions of dollars flow into Georgia in 2020 to help voters cast ballots safely during the pandemic. Some of the GOP view this as big tech money. See Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg influencing elections, even though there's no evidence that it was used for partisan purposes.
All right. Thank you, Emil. Martha, education, what will you be watching?
Well, I'll be looking to see if the House Education Committee takes up a new school voucher bill that's been introduced. I'm hearing, though, given the recent cuts to schools, there's not a big appetite to pass another voucher bill, which would potentially divert more money away from public schools.
As we wind things down here, Emma, there was one interesting development this week that may be attributed to Democrats gaining a bit more influence in the Republican-controlled legislature, right? Can you chat about that a little bit?
Yeah, so we got our list of House committee chairmanship assignments from Republican Speaker David Ralston, which is pretty normal, and buried in there was a Democrat getting a chairmanship, which is rare, and it was for MARTOC, which is a committee that oversees MARTA's budget. And I'm told it's unprecedented for a Democrat to get a chairmanship from Speaker Ralston, but it's Representative Mary Margaret Oliver from Decatur. She's a veteran lawmaker. She served in the House and the Senate back when Democrats controlled things. But I think two things to note. One, like you said, you know, Democrats have gained more influence in Georgia. Democrats, you know, won these elections recently, and Speaker Ralston is aware of that and paying attention to it. And then also, you know, MARTA is Atlanta's metro network, and there are no more Republicans who represent the city of Atlanta. The last one was voted out in November.
Thank you guys again for sorting through all of this for the Gold Dome Scramble. That's it this week. Emma, Emil, Martha, and Sam, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
All right. Gold Dome Scramble is produced by Susanna Capiluto. Don't forget our mothership podcast, Political Breakfast, is fresh every Friday morning. I'm Lisa Ram. See you next week.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now Plugged In, a WAB politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WAB politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WAB.org or your favorite podcast platform.